You're listening to local and regional news produced by KMUN with help from our news partners. I'm Katie Frankwitz, and I'll soon be joined by my co-host, Skylar Butenshin. It's Monday, June 2nd. The suspect in a fatal hit-and-run incident in Astoria yesterday morning faces charges of second-degree manslaughter, as well as driving under the influence of intoxicants. 50-year-old Michael Munson Smith was arrested Sunday after he allegedly hit an elderly woman with his van near 16th and Irving Avenue and then fled the scene. The 77-year-old pedestrian died at the scene. According to police, Smith then hit another car driven by an Astoria woman near 17th Street and Irving Avenue. The woman told KMUN she had denied medical attention at the time of the accident, but later went to the hospital to get checked. Police located Smith in his van in the 1700 block of Jerome Avenue. The neighborhood was impacted for most of the day as police investigated various crime scenes across a five-block area. The Tongue Point Job Corps Center in Astoria is shutting down. It was one of the first in the nation to open in 1965 and hosts 313 students, many of whom live on campus, as well as 165 staff members. Nationally, Job Corps serves over 50,000 students annually. Mac McGoldrick, the director at Tongue Point Job Corps, says the closure will impact Astoria greatly and that from his perspective, it doesn't make sense. He says the center trains people for the kinds of skilled apprenticeships and trades jobs that the Trump administration has championed. The shutdown announcement comes amid a nationwide pause in Job Corps Center operations and will go into effect June 30th. Earlier this year, the U.S. Department of Labor said the Job Corps program faced significant financial challenges and released a transparency report citing low graduation rates and a number of serious incident reports, including sexual assault, drug use, and hospital visits. The Management and Training Corporation, the contractor that oversees the Tongue Point Job Corps Center and 21 other centers, said the report painted a distorted picture and failed to recognize the program's successes. The contractor noted that most of the incidents the report cited were minor and that the closure will, quote, deny thousands of students the chance to earn certificates and pursue stable employment. Representative Suzanne Bonamici, an Oregon Democrat, says the closure is the wrong direction for the country. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian, online at dailyhistorian.com.
The vote on a measure that would increase Tillamook County's transient lodging tax will most likely head to a hand recount once election results are certified on June 16th. Tillamook County Clerk Christy Nythus' office released updated election results last Thursday. The results showed there were only 11 more no votes than yes votes for the measure, after nearly 9,000 votes were counted. The threshold to trigger a recount in this case is a difference of 17 votes. The measure seeks to increase Tillamook County's transient lodging tax rate from 10% to 14%. It was advanced by county commissioners in response to a budget crunch in the county government. All ballots with verified signatures have now been tabulated, but any ballots with challenged signatures or lacking signatures altogether can still be verified in person by their caster until June 10th. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com. School districts across Clatsop County are facing financial difficulties as they finalize their budgets for the fiscal year, some more than others. Both the Astoria and Napa school districts are considering staff cuts. And for the Jewell School District, the biggest change to this year's budget is a reduction in timber revenue. Jewell is one of only four districts in Oregon that falls outside of the state's school equalization formula. As the State Board of Forestry narrowly approved the Habitat Conservation Plan last year, Jewell is bracing for much lower harvests. Interim Superintendent Corey Peterson says timber revenues made up $4.5 million of the district's adopted general fund budget last year. This year, the district anticipates receiving about $1 million less than that in quarterly timber receipts. Despite that, Peterson says the district has managed to plan for minimal cuts to staffing and programming for the coming year. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian, online at dailyastorian.com.
The seafood industry is among a number of economic sectors reeling from back-and-forth court decisions involving President Trump's tariffs. It's nothing new for fishing captains and processors who have dealt with past trade tensions. But this time around, seafood businesses are also dealing with the added problem of federal workforce cuts. As Kyra Buckley reports, it comes even as fishing communities search for local solutions.
It's lunchtime at local ocean restaurant in Newport.
I'm going to have a tuna wrap. Okay. I haven't had one in a long time. Yes, very okay with fries.
Anything you drink?
I'm good with water, thanks, Brooke.
That customer on a first-name basis with the server is Laura Anderson. She opened Local Ocean with a fisherman nearly two decades ago.
Creating market opportunity for fishers and showcasing local species were really what drove the founding of the restaurant.
So from the beginning, Anderson made sure Local Ocean buys fish directly from Newport's fleet of commercial fishing boats.
I don't think it was until later that I really realized what was happening in the global import-export market.
What she realized is that Local Ocean is an anomaly. Most seafood sold at restaurants on the Oregon coast is not from Oregon. Meanwhile, Newport-based fisheries expert Gil Sylvia says most fish from Oregon's commercial fleet is sent to other countries.
Bottom line is a lot of our food products here get exported.
As a consequence of President Trump's tariffs, Sylvia says foreign countries are retaliating against the U.S. fishing industry. That means prices go up as international demand for Oregon fish goes down. Heather Mann has worked in the commercial fishing industry for about three decades. Right now, she's the executive director of Midwater Trawlers Cooperative in Newport. The nonprofit represents more than 30 vessels.
Fishing and having a life in the fishing industry is chaotic. There's ups and downs for all variety of reasons from season to season, year to year.
Mann says tariffs mean uncertainty, but fishers are used to dealing with trade disruptions. Her concern is around the federal workforce. Fishermen need trained federal workers to help study the health of fisheries. That determines when fishing seasons start and how many fish each boat can bring in. She says without federal workers to help with that complex process,
exporting fish doesn't matter because we won't be able to fish.
Mann says if they can't fish, they won't have anything to sell overseas, regardless of the tariffs. And there's also a problem on the demand side. There might not be a market at home. 80% of the seafood Americans consume is imported. So why can't we support a seafood industry through domestic demand for the fish caught here?
Because that's not what consumers want. I'm telling you, it's that simple.
Fisheries expert Sylvia also says Americans eat less fish than people in other countries. What we do eat is often imported farmed fish, which can be cheaper than wild-caught U.S. options. It's not just a demand problem. There also isn't the infrastructure to get locally caught fish into local markets. 5 miles up the road from Local Ocean is an unassuming small warehouse. Anderson bought it about 5 years ago as a place the restaurant could process large catches coming in from Newport's fleet.
So when we buy 5,000 or 6,000 pounds of ground fish from a boat in one day, we were trying to manage that at the restaurant while we were also serving 900 customers a day.
But the warehouse is too big for just Local Ocean. Anderson invited a nonprofit to manage the property. Under the name of Yaquina Lab, the space and equipment is now available for commercial users like fishermen to rent.
We can accommodate multiple users at one time. We have an ice machine now. We have a vacuum packer. There's a smoker. There's a dehydrator. There's a blast freezer that can freeze fish down to minus 35 degrees in a very short period of time, which is important for quality.
The efforts of folks like Anderson won't create robust demand for Oregon fish in Oregon overnight. but it could help more Oregonians understand how the industry works, one tuna wrap at a time. In Newport, I'm Kyra Buckley reporting.
You're listening to news from KMUN. To hear us on the air and catch national news from NPR, tune in to 91.9 FM. Morning news begins at 7:59 every weekday. And of course, you'll always find today's local and regional news here at KMUN.org. To contact the KMUN News Department, email us at news1@KMUN.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at KMUN.org. See you tomorrow.